capacity licensing announcement for a distributed software conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Roger Kerr. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Leanna, and hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on such short notice. We're going to talk about an announcement that we're going to make next Tuesday that describes in more detail how we're going to evolve the subcapacity licensing program. But first, before I do that, I know that in the notes that got sent out, we pointed you to the subcapacity website on Excel to get the charts. It turns out there seems to have been some problem with the Excel infrastructure last night, and although the charts were submitted to be posted, that apparently didn't happen. So if you take a look in your mail, I sent out an urgent note about 20 minutes ago, I believe, to everyone on the distribution list I had. So look for an urgent note for me if you had received information about this call from me. If you don't have them yet, please ping on same time John Keep. It's J. R-K-E-E-P at us.ibm.com. Again, that's J-R-K-E-E-P, as in Peter, at us.ibm.com, and John will forward you the charts. So with this announcement, we continue to evolve the subcapacity offering, again, trying to provide our customers a better solution to fit the needs as they increasingly adopt virtualization technologies. So if you'll move with me to slide two of the deck, we're going to start off and just talk about the chronology of this offering, how long it's been in the marketplace, and where it's going to go. Then we'll go back and review a number of the key software licensing concepts that subcapacity builds upon. These are some of the ones that, as myself and the peers, who, by the way, are also here on the call and will help with the question and answer, these are some of the ones that we get most frequently, and we wanted to make sure you all understand these concepts so that you can better explain the subcapacity offering as well. Then we'll review some basic subcapacity licensing concepts, the approach we take to our licensing rules, and then get into the specifics of what we will announce next Tuesday. Finally, have some useful links. I'll also mention that in the backup to this deck, there are a couple charts on virtualization. One of the things we found is that not everyone has a real firm understanding of what virtualization is. And although there wasn't time to cover it on the presentation today, we thought we'd add a couple of charts there for those of you who might have some questions. So let's go ahead and move to slide three in the deck, talk about the chronology of the subcapacity licensing. You all should know that this is only talking about the distributed software subcapacity. That's why it's labeled Passport Advantage. And we originally announced this about two and a half years ago, in April of 2005. Expanded that a year later in April of 2006 when we added the support for x86 on top of the RISC processors that we had been supporting. Then, as we had an increasing number of large enterprises begin to use the subcapacity offering, we discovered that for a number of reasons, not really having to do with the tool itself, but to a large degree the way IBM packages our software, meaning that we provide software both standalone for a fee and as part of a bundle. Yet in those two cases, although customers would pay for one and not for the other, we packaged them identically and the tool couldn't tell the difference between them. So for large, complex customers, it became very difficult to track some of those issues to be certain that they were in compliance from a tool perspective. So in April of this year, as you probably know, we suspended the three terms, and we'll review what those were in a little bit. What we're going to announce on Tuesday is that we're going to eliminate the terms that require them to register their administration server with IBM's license management server and to submit a report quarterly. We will continue the suspension of the tool. We're also going to be announcing support for x86 multi-core chips to the processor core and a series of statements of direction on virtualization technologies that our sister division, STG, will announce for the I and the P series systems on Tuesday. And then we're going to point to another statement of direction which talks about a new license metric tool that we'll have available to simplify the subcapacity offering. It'll be available roughly mid-year next year, and again, we'll talk about that as well. So when you take a look at where we've come from and where we're going with subcapacity, this kind of in one chart lays out that chronology. Now, our subcapacity licensing is really built on some of the core principles we have for our licensing strategy, and let's talk about them on slide four. What we're really doing across the board with our PBU structure and with the subcapacity offering is trying to make sure that our licensing and the pricing that accompanies it really corresponds to the value that customers can get from workloads running using our middleware, and that as the customer's value grows, the licensing scales with that. That certainly enables us to then price much more competitively in the marketplace. Now, as we do this, we recognize that we could get much more precise about the way we measure to get much closer to the true actual values customers get at any moment. But what we've also done is recognize that so many of our customers do not have the administrative staffs or processes available to be able to monitor and administer those very precise measurements. Think, if you will, about the kinds of processes and staffs that many of our System Z customers have to track the much more precise licensing approaches that are available on the Z. So we have balanced this very carefully between precise measures of value and as simple a licensing structure as we can possibly have. Again, trying to make sure that the licensing scales with the value customers get from the middleware. So that when you take a look at the two graphs in the bottom, if we use user-based pricing, you know, per-user pricing, you know, it's very easy to see how the price that a customer is ultimately paying scales very nicely with the number of users using that software. And, of course, where we can't easily track users, we instead use the processor capacity that's available that we measure in PBUs, and that as the customer gets more value, the price goes up. So balancing that simplicity with the precise measure of value, we are trying to balance that to make sure that customers receive fair value for the money they pay for our middleware. That is the foundation for the processor value unit structure that is not only used on many of the products, but is specifically upon which the license upon which the subcapacity offering is built. So let's go ahead and move to slide five and talk about a couple things as we transition to PBUs starting a year and a half ago to today to make it easier for you to be able to explain the subcapacity offering to your customers. So you all probably remember that we announced the processor value unit structure and the associated part numbers back in July of 2006. And for customers who had renewals starting after November 1st of last year, just a year ago, those renewals have been processed in PBUs. Now, as customers take a look at the conversion from the old per processor to the processor value unit structure, we use the standard conversion rate of one per processor license for 100 PBUs. So as those renewal quotes were generated, again, starting a year ago, we used that standard conversion factor that ensured that no customers were hurt with that announcement. Every customer had enough licenses in that conversion for all the technology that was on the floor at the time. And at this point, we withdrew almost all of the per-processor licenses back in January of 2007. Now, customers who had acquired per-processor licenses, I want to emphasize that the license itself for the base product that received the entitlement for remains in per-processor, and they were given a new entitlement for the maintenance renewal that would be in PBUs. So it's quite possible for customers to have an entitlement to the base license in per-processor if they acquired it prior to July of 2006, and then to have the renewal entitlement in PBUs. And again, we did that conversion in as 100 PBUs for each per processor license that the customer had. And since we announced the processor value unit structure, we have had some additional new processor technologies added to the structure so that we've had the quad-core x86 processor technology, and those use either a half of an existing per-processor license for each processor core, meaning that if your customer has a quad-core x86 processor core, they would require two of the old per-processor licenses, or if they purchase new licenses that are in PBUs, that would be 50 PBUs per processor core for a total of 200 on that quad-core x86. And, of course, you've probably seen that STG has announced the next generation of the Power family. The Power 6 is available in both the System P and the System I today, and we'll see those lines get expanded in the future, I'm sure. And we announced that it required 120 PBUs per processor core, which was a terrific value for our customers. They saw nearly a doubling in processor performance of the Power 6 over the Power 5, while the licensing requirement only went up 20%, gave them a terrific price performance improvement. And on top of that, if you consider it, customers don't need to do a one-for-one replacement of Power 5 to Power 6. Because of that performance improvement, they can significantly reduce the number of Power 6 processor cores that they have, meaning that ultimately their software licensing actually probably decreases. But for customers who had the previous per-processor licenses, those software deployed on the Power 6 processors will require 1.2 of the existing per-processor licenses, or a combination of, meaning that they can take one of the old per-processor licenses and acquire an additional 20 PBUs to make the equivalent of 120 PBUs or 1.2 per-processor licenses. And if you move with me to slide 6, we'll see the current processor value unit table, the ones you would see if you went to the subcapacity website, either internally or externally. And of course, what we ask all of our customers to do is to identify the number of processor cores that are available to our middleware products. I recognize that there are some customers out there who have gone along with the change in definition that vendors like Intel and AMD have done in the, for the term processor, but all of our licensing has always licensed to the processor core. We historically just used the word processor for that. We try to be a little more specific today and say processor core to cut down on the confusion. But we have consistently licensed to the processor core for years, well before the introduction of the x86 dual-core chip. So we continue to license to the processor core. Where there are more than one cores on a chip, they need to license down to those individual cores. And so count the number of cores, then find the appropriate processor technology on this table and identify the appropriate number of PBUs. If you or your customer isn't familiar from the server brand and model name, the specific processor technology which is deployed from this table, I encourage you to look to the guide to identifying your processor. You'll see a link to that at the bottom of this page in the last bullet. And that for some of the leading models that are being sold in the marketplace today by all of our key competitors, we try to point you to exactly what kind of technology they're running and the number of PBUs that that particular technology would require. You also notice as you go through the guide, there are some models which, for instance, an x86 could have either dual or quad core, but at least it gets you into the right ballpark to understand what questions you need to specifically ask your customer to make sure that they get licensed appropriately. Of course, this table, which now has four tiers in it, starting with the original three tiers where we had grandfathered in all the old technology, as we have added the new technologies that have been announced, and there are some new technologies in most of these tiers. That is, technologies have been announced since the processor value unit structure was introduced in July of 2006. We've begun adding those based on their relative performance. And I remind you that we use a blended benchmark of five industry standard benchmarks. We don't make up the ratings ourselves. We work with the chip vendors, the system vendors, to determine the results of those benchmarks. We ask them for the data, and wherever possible, when they have that data, that's what we use. So five industry standard benchmarks are used to create that rating. And we feel very good that as we've looked back historically on the work we've done, it seems to have been validated very well with the work done by some outside firms who tend to publish well after these servers are introduced into the marketplace, also basing their work on industry standard benchmarks. Now, the final thing that I would mention while we're here talking on the processor value unit page, please do regularly go back to the website, and you see that link at the very bottom of the page, because as new processor technologies are introduced, we make sure that the table on the both the internal and the external subcapacity websites are updated to include it. So for any new processor technology comes out, please go to the website instead of just relying on the chart on this page. And although we don't ever intend to change a rating of a particular system, it is important to go there to pick up the new ratings when new processor families are introduced. Now, on slide 7, one of the key things, one of the key reasons behind our introduction of the processor value units that becomes, again, very important as we talk to our customers about subcapacity and help put in perspective that added value that subcapacity licensing brings, is the fact that the processor value unit structure provides us the flexibility to make sure that regardless of the relative performance improvement of a new processor family, we can make sure that they see a price performance improvement for their middleware. And if you take a look at the processors that have been announced, in some cases they are much faster processors, as you saw with the Power 6. In other cases, they're roughly flat or maybe even a little bit slower than the processor technology they replaced. And again, by varying the number of PBUs required, it makes sure that we can give customers a positive price performance improvement story for our middleware. And that, again, is one of the core principles behind the processor value unit, to recognize the relative performance of these new processor families and to make sure that they're assigned into the structure in a way that provides enough granularity to show relative performance, but not so much granularity that we make that structure overly complex. You know, with only four tiers in the structure, it is not terribly worse than what we had before. And in fact, quickly, as you use it, you can find the appropriate technology that your customer is planning to use and the appropriate PBU structure there. But this will allow us to make sure, again, that we track much more closely to value as we go forward through time with new processor families that get introduced. So if we move to slide 8, let's just compare and contrast our full capacity licensing, which has been around for years and years, with the subcapacity licensing that we encourage customers to use as they adopt virtualization technology. So on a full capacity license terms, customers need to acquire PBU licenses based on the total capacity on the server. That means every activated processor core that's on that server has to be licensed, whether the software, the middleware, the application is running on that processor core or not. Full capacity licensing, the terms say you must license to all the cores on the server that are activated. Deactivated cores, and many systems today ship from the factory with deactivated cores that customers can then insert a code to activate the processor. They only need the license to these processors when they're activated. Until processor's activated, they do not need to have a license. But once it's activated, they need to have licenses immediately using the full capacity. And, of course, the PBU tier structure, as I've just been describing, is based on the relative performance of the processor core of that server. Now, with our subcapacity licensing offering, customers must be using a supported virtualization technology. We license to the processor capacity that's available for that virtual machine. What the virtualization technologies essentially do is allow customers to take a physical server and chop it up into multiple logical servers, and we'll see some pictures of that coming up in a few pages. And what we're saying is they have to license for that processor capacity that is available to that virtual server that is running our middleware. The virtualization technology makes sure that only the right number of processor cores are used, but at a total server level, by each virtual machine thinking it has more resource than it actually physically has, customers can drive up the utilization of the underlying server, getting a better return on their investment in that hardware. And that's what we mean here by the over-assignment of processor resources. Each virtual machine can believe it has more resources than it may actually have at any moment to better utilize the overall underlying hardware. And by doing this, the software, the middleware licensing, helps add to the improvement in total cost of ownership that our customers can get as they use virtualization, often to consolidate a larger number of servers onto a smaller number of larger servers. And there's lots of good reasons to do that. There are great total cost of ownership stories, but don't let them forget that by reducing the number of cores that they need to license to, by only licensing to the cores that are available to the software in that virtual machine, adds to that overall improvement in the total cost of ownership for the customers when they use the subcapacity licensing. So let's take a look at a couple of scenarios that describe the differences in what full capacity versus subcapacity are and the generic approach we take to our licensing rules for virtualized environments. So on slide 9, our first scenario, the customer is using all of the processor cores in the server. As you can see, there are 8 physical cores in the server. That's the 8 circles at the bottom of the diagram. And they have WebSphere and MQ both running on workload number 1, which uses that full server. So there's no partitions here. Those two middleware products have access to every processor core in the server. So full capacity licensing makes sense in this case, and you need to license to all 8 cores for both WebSphere and MQ in this scenario. Now, as we move to slide 10, we see a simple virtualization example where they have static partitions. That means partitions are defined and they don't change in size at all. They've just been defined and stay that way forever. And in this particular system, you see 2 logical systems, 2 virtual machines, each representing a logical system. One is the same workload we saw in the previous example, running WebSphere and MQ workload number 1. It runs in a partition that is that has 4 processor cores available to it. We also, however, have a second workload that only runs WebSphere, that is in a partition by itself, again, a logical server, if you will, a virtual machine that also has 4 processor cores available to it. So that each of the 2 partitions has 4 processor cores. There are 8 physical processor cores on the system, so you can see that all 8 of the physical cores have been assigned permanently to one or the other partition. Now, when we take a look at the licensing for those cores, for WebSphere, which runs on both workloads, it's still effectively using all 8 cores on the server between the 2 virtual machines. So, in fact, full capacity licensing could be used for WebSphere in this case. However, for MQ, you can have a significant reduction in the number of licenses needed if they adopt subcapacity licensing, since they would only need to license in a subcapacity mode to the 4 cores that are available to partition 2. Again, that begins to improve the total cost of ownership for the customer with that decrease in licenses for MQ. Now, let's take a look at a more complex example of a virtualized environment that you see on slide 11. And here we've added multiple levels of partitioning to the system using multiple levels of virtualization technologies, different approaches And you'll find that as you go from vendor to vendor, you'll see the specific technology changes, but the concepts remain fairly the same as they add complexity to the virtualization technologies. So as we look at this diagram, you see partition one, again, it's that same WebSphere MQ partition with running workload one that believes it has four processor cores assigned to it. And what that means, by the way, when I say it believes it has four processor cores, when it needs four processor cores and they're available, it will get access to them. But when it's not using all the four cores, when it's, you know, idle part of the time, those physical processor resources can be shared with other partitions. And that's how the virtualization technologies drive up the utilization on the hardware. Now, we also still have that same partition two we saw on the previous example, just running WebSphere, also has four virtual processor cores assigned to it. We've also added, though, a third WebSphere partition, workload number three, that has two virtual processor cores assigned to it. Now, you see that across those three partitions, the three different workloads there, it adds up to a total of 10 virtual processor cores. Now, in reality, that's been assigned to what's called a shared pool of processors that's only made up of six processor cores. And by sharing across those six cores, they're able to make each of the partitions think it has the number of virtual processor cores that have been assigned to it. So let's take a look at what the licensing looks like there. Now, you'll see again that WebSphere is running in all three of those workloads, so that it would need four processor cores for workload one, four processor cores for workload two, and two processor cores for workload three for a total of 10 cores. However, take a look at that shared processor pool only has six physical processor cores assigned to it. And one of the key principles of our licensing is that customers never have to license for more processor cores than are physically available. So in this case, WebSphere actually only has access to six physical processor cores, even though it thinks it has 10 virtual processor cores. But for a customer licensing WebSphere, in this example, we reduce the number of licenses required to the six physical processor cores that you see in the shared processor pool. For MQ, it continues to run in only workload one, the partition one, with four virtual processor cores. Now, since when the workload requires it, it can actually use four of those physical processor cores in the shared pool. Customers are required to license for four processor cores. Now, let me just mention for a moment that this particular system has two other physical processor cores that are dedicated to partition four. There's no IBM middleware running in partition four, completely different workload, so we don't require any licenses at all for the two processor cores in partition four. So that, in the end, you see that on this system, the customer requires six licenses for WebSphere, or licenses for six processor cores for WebSphere and four processor cores for MQ. And to take a look at what that results in terms of price, let's take a look at page 12, which is done in U.S. dollars using list prices as of September 30th of this year. And you see the three scenarios we just walked through stacked from top to bottom on the left. First, the server with no partitions, then scenario two, where server with two static partitions, and then a scenario three where it had a more complete virtualized environment using the shared processor pool and a set of virtual processors. You can see that in the full capacity licensing, customer would require eight licenses of WAS and eight licenses of MQ in each of those situations, so the price wouldn't change. Again, that's only if the customer used full capacity licensing. But when you take a look down the subcapacity licensing column, of course, in scenario one, where it was truly a full capacity approach, you wouldn't need to use subcapacity licensing. But as you move to scenario two, that price drops roughly $25,000. And as you move to scenario three, the more complete virtualization adoption, you see that it drops all the way to just under $120,000. So a drop of over $56,000 for this customer. Again, when we talk about the improvement that subcapacity licensing can make to a customer's total cost of ownership, that's what we refer to as that savings of that $56,000. And in addition, that helps make sure, as we talked about in that early chart, that as the workload increases, using subcapacity licensing, they can much more fully track to the value they're receiving because they're using these virtualization technologies to help administer and manage their systems. So that as we take a look on slide 13, the benefits of our capacity-based licensing. Licensing to the processor core gives us a much more granular measure of the capacity that a customer may actually be using, and it becomes critical in accurately reflecting the value in a virtualized environment. Customers in many, many cases are not creating partitions only at a chip boundary, as, for instance, some of our x86 vendors have defined the processor at the chip level. Many of our customers are actually partitioning below that to the processor core level. By licensing to the core, we make our software more granular and improve their total cost of ownership because they only need to license to the cores that are actually being used by that particular partition using our subcapacity offering. Of course, PBU licensing itself provides more flexibility to track the value much more appropriately based on the relative performance that the processor has and the amount of workload that they can get through that particular processor. And then as we've been discussing the subcapacity licensing, then by licensing to only the capacity of the partitions which are running the IBM middleware, they get a much better value. They are leveraging the hardware technologies and the technologies which are increasingly being built into the operating systems and the applications to improve their overall total cost of ownership, and really does a much better job of aligning the price customers pay with the value they're getting. Because of that added value from subcapacity, that closer alignment to the value, one of the things I think we all need to keep in mind as we bid subcapacity licenses is that discounts should probably be reduced over what we've done in the past. Subcapacity itself has an enormous additional value to the customer. Again, you saw a simplified example in the previous few charts how they can save a significant amount of money. And as a result, we shouldn't have to discount our offerings as much in those environments because of that added value that subcapacity brings. So let's now move and talk about the announcement that we're going to make next Tuesday to the customers. Again, I ask you to treat this information as confidential until Tuesday. But on Tuesday, we will announce that two of the terms that we had originally had in our subcapacity licensing offering, the need to register the Tivoli License Compliance Manager administration server with our LMS tool, that stands for License Management Server, and then to submit reports on their usage to IBM Quarterly have been eliminated. Now, the reports being submitted to IBM have been eliminated, but we will be providing a new tool, which we're referring to now as a license metric tool. We'll see what name comes out when that tool actually does become available in the middle of next year. In addition to just subcapacity, it will also track all PBU-based offerings so that customers who wanted to track full capacity licenses with this tool could do that as well. Now, however, we will be requiring the use of this tool when it becomes available in the subcapacity world. And customers will be required to generate reports and retain them themselves. They don't have to submit them to IBM, but they will be required to retain these reports themselves in case of an audit. So they'll be required to keep them for a period of at least 2 years. If an auditor comes in, they can produce those reports, which show them that they were in compliance for subcapacity make the whole compliance audit a much easier process to go through because of those reports. Now, we're also announcing a series of statements of direction. The first set you see on slide 14 are for new virtualization technologies that STG is going to announce on Tuesday. And I'm not going to go through and describe in detail what those are. Obviously, the System P and System I teams will be having extensive education on these individual technologies. And as we announce the actual support for them, but before the end of fourth quarter or by the end of fourth quarter next year, we will describe exactly how the license counting will work for each of these individual technologies, because each one has a slight twist to them. But these cover all of the new virtualization approaches that are being announced by STG. You'll see that some of them are hardware-based and some of them are software-based. Again, we will support all of them by the end of 2008. If you happen to have a customer installing a PowerSix and wanting to use some of these prior to that and subcapacity becomes important for that, we would certainly consider a special bid request, but we'll leave that in your hands to determine if that's the appropriate way to go with your customer. Now, in addition to those statements of direction, both for a simplified license metric tool and for the new virtualization technologies, we're also announcing that there are two technologies which prior to Tuesday we could only do subcapacity down to the chip level, and we're announcing that they now too will go down to the processor core level, and most importantly there, it's the multi-core x86 chips. The dual-core and the quad-core chips can now use subcapacity license at the processor core level. Also, the Sun UltraSpark T1, which was an 8-core chip, will be supported to the processor core level as of now. And that's using the trust model, since the use of the Tivoli License Compliance Manager remains in suspension. Again, we eliminated the other two, but we are continuing the suspension on the tool until the simplified license metric tool becomes available in the middle of next year. So if you move to slide 15, if you were on the April call where we suspended the terms, we talked about all three of the terms that you see in pictures on this page were suspended. And with this announcement, we continue the suspension on the use of the license metric tool. Previously, that was the Tivoli License Compliance Manager. But we are eliminating the requirement to register their admin server and to submit that report to IBM quarterly. Again, they'll still need, once the new tool comes out in mid-2008, they'll still need to generate the reports internally and to keep them. But this new license metric tool, as I said on the previous slide, it'll identify the IBM software deployed on all servers if the customer chooses. They only have to track the subcapacity, but they can certainly track full capacity licenses as well. And we'll tell what the processor type is that it's running on and the number of processor cores that are available to the middleware. And then using that information, you can use the appropriate number of PBUs for that processor type and determine the total number of PBUs that the customer needs to have to be in compliance. And as I mentioned, use that tool, maintain the reports so that they can be audit ready. On slide 16, there are three ways we're going to be notifying customers in addition to you folks. We assume you'll be out talking to your customers about this. There will be an announcement letter. As of this morning, U.S. time, we only have the U.S. announcement letter number. Hopefully that will be enough to help you track through to whatever the number is in your IoT. And, of course, as soon as we have the announcement letter numbers, we will put them up on our subcapacity website. We will also be sending a letter to all existing subcapacity customers telling them that those two terms are eliminated and the suspension on the tool continues. And then we will be updating the public website as well. And of course, both the internal and the external public websites will be updated as of Tuesday to include the new information. If you actually look there today, we talk about this call on the internal site, but we're not going to update it with all the information until it's actually announced on Tuesday, and of course the public site will be updated at that same time. So let's just summarize on slide 17 what the requirements are for customers to use subcapacity licensing. First, they need to agree to the terms of the subcapacity attachment. Secondly, they need to make sure that they're using an eligible IBM product. It means not only a product that's supported, but make sure that they're on the right version and release. They need to make sure that the virtualization technology they're using is supported and that the processor they're running that on is supported. And list of all of those will be on both the internal and external sites. And, of course, then when we lift the suspension with the announcement in the middle of next year for the new license metric tool, they'll be required to install that, run it against all of their subcapacity licenses at a minimum, and then generate the report, which will show what their high watermark capacity available is for the products on those virtualized systems. And all of those lists can be found on the subcapacity website internally. It's also, by the way, available to customers on the external site. And by the way, note that even during this period of time when the use of the tool is suspended, customers are still required to be in compliance. We know it's a little bit more difficult to track it, but we would ask you to work with your customers to make sure that they're doing everything possible to be in compliance with our terms and conditions and that they have the appropriate number of licenses. So in slide 18, we have a number of customers who have wanted to convert full capacity licenses to subcapacity. That's certainly possible, and it's been done in a number of cases already. The subcapacity products do have unique part numbers. That is what the license metric tool uses to help track those versions of the products. And those products, by the way, are exactly the same price. We do not charge a price differential, even though the customer is getting that extra value, the cost savings, by only having to license to the processor cores used in the partitions that that middleware is running in. But to convert, they can take any existing, whether it's per processor or PVU license, and convert them to subcapacity licenses. But when converted, they'll be PVU only. We don't have any way to convert an old per processor license to a per processor subcapacity. So that if they convert it, it will be to a PVU-only subcapacity license. And, of course, then, as customers renew their maintenance, as I described before, the proof of entitlements for the maintenance will only be in processor value units, even if the original license, the proof of entitlement that was acquired prior to July of 2006 remains per processor. And to do this conversion, the customer must be in compliance on that system before they convert, meaning that they have to have the right number of licenses for all the processor cores on that system, and they must have a current maintenance contract to be able to convert. And if it turns out that they have extra licenses after the conversion because they are reducing the number of processor cores assigned to a particular middleware through the use of supported virtualization technologies, we don't offer any refunds or credits. Or substitutions for those extra licenses, but they certainly welcome to retain them and redeploy them as their workload requires on that server or another server. And for the forms themselves, we're going to tell the customers to call you folks. You can get the forms required on the internal subcapacity page. You saw that link on the previous chart, and it'll come up again here on the next page, which on slide 19 has a set of useful links. There's the external page customers can get to. It has a list there of many of the items that we've just been talking about that are available there. The internal page right below that has some additional information. As of Tuesday, we will update it with an updated customer presentation reflecting the Tuesday's announcement. Shortly following that will be a Q&A. By the way, that's the page that the MP3 file from this call and hopefully the charts, if that Excel infrastructure gets working correctly, will also be available on. Lots of resources there for you. If there's things that you're missing, please try to feedback the information to us, and we'll see if we can get it provided to you. Now, on slide 20, one of the other things that we're going to be providing to you, starting with some of the technologies immediately and some others coming very quickly afterwards, is we're going to give more detailed information on how to count licenses using specific vendors' virtualization technology. So we've had available for a couple years now how to license an AIX on a P5 System P, Power 5 System P. We're going to expand that to talk System P and System I using AIX. We'll have HP's technologies available as of Tuesday. We're in the final stages. I know some of my peers that are on the call have been working diligently with some folks at Sun to finalize those, which certainly hoping that they're done in time for Tuesday, but that may be a couple days later. And the VMware team has been helping us, but that's coming along a little more slowly. We're not quite as satisfied with where that is. And instead of putting it up too early, we'll put it up when it's ready. So please look for that on the subcapacity internal page. You'll see those go up, and they'll help you determine with your customers exactly the number of processor cores you need to license to using each of those technologies. So with that, Leanna, if we could open the line for questions.
Certainly.
Please.
If you would like to ask a question today, you may do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question. We'll pause for just a moment. And our first question comes from John Stahl.
Hello, John. This is John Stahl from the Netherlands. I was wondering, is VMware version 3 supported as a virtualization technology?
Raj, let me pass that over to you because I know there's been some questions on the different versions, and I think you're most up-to-date on which versions of VMware that we're supporting these days.
Sure. The versions we support currently are ESX 2.5, and that's in an SMP mode, and also GSX 3.1. And we are planning and we're working with the VMware team to qualify support on additional technologies. But we do not support, VI3 and the infrastructure components underneath that, like vMotion and DRS yet.
So vMotion is not supported?
vMotion is not supported in a subcapacity environment. Of course, you know, if customers license to full capacity on, let's say, a server farm that has 4 or 8 servers, and they apply virtualization technologies on those, you know, they're welcome to do that. But if they want to do things in a subcapacity manner, then we would not support, we do not currently support that. We only do ESX 2.5 and GSX 3.1. Our goal,
okay,
is, and the reason for that is what we're trying to do is that, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, as we support technologies and we allow customers to license, we also provide a tool that supports the license counting for those, right? So, when, as Roger went through, middle of next year, we'll have the tool that will be counting the PBUs, and it will. We want to ensure that the customers have a proper experience and it's able to track the right and count the right number of licenses that are required. So we're very diligent about trying to sync up, and we are working hard with VMware to catch up on some of the other technologies.
Okay. If I have specific questions on further support on VMware, who's the best to contact?
There are two kinds of things. Let me just clarify. When we say support, actually, you can send me, rather than take up time to call, you can send a note to the subcap ID that Roger has in his presentation, and I will respond to that. But let me clarify, because there are other people on this call, there are two important things. One is IBM supports our software to work with VMware environments, and there's a link that I can provide for that that gives an overall IBM corporate software group strategy statement. But from a subcapacity licensing offering standpoint, you know, there's limitations on which ones we are considering to be eligible. Okay, so I just want to delineate that. But I don't want people to walk away with thinking that IBM software does not support something. Software group.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a very important point. So strategy-wise, software group is supporting, and if customers on PA, call in for help, there's guidelines for that for VMware support, and there's a link that we can provide for that. Okay?
Okay.
John, the one thing I would add to what Raj, and by the way, that was Raj Krishnamurthy, the one thing I would add to that is you and your customer need to understand that VMware made a fairly significant change in the way it implemented its virtualization between 2.5 and the 3.x releases. And that's a piece of what needs to be validated that our tool can accurately track it.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you.
Sure.
Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question. I have no further questions at this time.
Well, then, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. please do. I encourage you to talk to your customers about this announcement. We think that this moves forward in a nice evolutionary way, the subcapacity offering, and continues to respond to the feedback we've had from customers on the program. I think that's one of the very positive things we can say to our customers is that, you know, when we announced the original program, you know, it was based on a number of years of experience through special bids. But as we expanded the program, we discovered that there were some areas that we could do a better job implementing, which is why we suspended the terms earlier this year. Now, as we promised at that time, we're giving you better insight into how we're going to direct the program, eliminating some parts of the program they thought were most onerous, continuing to provide a tool, even though it's not, you know, we're not requiring a tool today. We recognize the importance of it, and we'll have the tool. We'll be the only vendor providing a tool to our customers to help track this licensing information in a virtualized environment, which, as you read some of the trade press, is you know, an increasing burden on customers. And some of our competitors have just thrown up their hands. Oracle has just said this is too complex a world. You know, we're just not, we don't know how to license that way. So we understand the subcapacity, and as you try to count licenses, becomes confusing as you move from one technology to another because there's no standard in the virtualization technologies. That's why we're going to provide the extra enablement material that explains how to count in each environment. But in total, moves forward very nicely, the subcapacity offering, adding to that message that we're trying to make sure that value the customer received is accurate reflected in the price they pay, so that we, as you saw in those early charts, you know, as close to a straight line as we can get, so that the price they pay matches the value they receive. So we think it's a really good story. So as Raj mentioned, if questions come up, certainly you can go to your normal support, whether it's the Passport Advantage consultants or to use the SubCap email ID to try and get questions to the team that's here on the phone at Worldwide. But we appreciate your interest. Certainly, if your friends want to hear what happened here, we'll be posting this MP3 file within a few days. It takes about 2 days to get the file back from the vendor and to work through IBM to get to us so that we can put it up on the website. And then, knock on wood, if Excel will let us put it up, we'll get that file up so that you can hear the replay on this or recommend it to your friends. So, again, thank you. We hope you all have a good afternoon and a good weekend.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining, and have a great day.